Why do we exist? Were we created with a purpose? Or are we just here by chance? What are we to believe about life, faith, and worldview? Welcome to The Universe Next Door, focusing on answers to the questions we all consider. The Universe Next Door is supported by the C.S. Lewis Society, Trinity College of Florida, and supported by gifts from listeners just like you. Discover more resources and continue the conversation at apologetics.org. And now, your host, the research professor of Bible and theology at Trinity College of Florida, author and speaker, Dr. Tom Woodward.
Welcome to The Universe Next Door. We are so excited today to be on the hunt. We're on the lookout. We are tracking down, at least we hope to get some clues, on two major elements in the total mix of the universe. So, Nick Shalna, are we ready to set out on our journey, on our hunt, on our exploration? Are you ready?
We are ready.
Okay, so we're looking, first of all, for something called DM, and with that, there's something called DE. Review for us. Nick, what is the DM part of the equation?
Dark matter.
Very good. Dark matter is something that we said in our opening program last week that has been really spotted as something that's there. It's lurking. It's mysteriously right alongside regular matter, but it's missing. I mean, we can't see it. We can't detect it. It doesn't emit light. It doesn't reflect light. You can't photograph it. We said that the physicist at UC Berkeley, Timothy Ferris, in his wonderful book, The Whole Shebang, described the Taj Mahal as having this imaginary dark Taj sitting across the river, which is even more massive than the original Taj. As a matter of fact, 10 times more massive. But you can't see it, but you can detect it because of its gravitational pull. And so I compared that to my little puppy dog, Darby, who's has a fluffy tan coat. And I said, imagine that walking around next to Darby all day long, every day, and sleeping next to Darby every night is dark Darby, okay, who weighs not 31 pounds, but 310 pounds. But you can't see dark Darby. You can't hear the panting. You can't hear the flapping of the tail against the floor. But you know because of the gravitational attraction. But what is dark Darby or dark Taj or any of these dark matter elements made of? We don't know. And we've tried like crazy to detect these so-called WIMPs, weakly interactive massive particles, or MACHOs, massive compact halo objects. And there's a new term that's being used now, axion. What's an axion? Well, let's hold on and see what the physicists are saying about these elusive particles, that they're using a new kind of like tiny, tiny, tiny particle, just as small as a neutrino. But still, when they add up in great numbers. Oh, by the way, Nick, they were saying that maybe if they had enough neutrinos that they could account for this, you know, dark matter. Now, neutrinos are a byproduct of nuclear fusion that's going on in our sun, so that literally each second I'm told several billion neutrinos are passing through your body.
Wow.
And mine. But it doesn't cause even a tickle. Isn't that wonderful?
I can feel it.
Oh, did you feel a tickle in, in your right in your right earlobe?
Yeah.
Uh-oh, that was a stray neutrino. So the neutrinos, they said, even though they have almost no mass, I mean, like barely, just a kind of a, you know, left hind heel of a gnat, you know, the mass is so negligible, you can almost ignore it. But if you have enough trillions times trillions of them, they would add up. And the other scientists have basically given up on the neutrino idea. The neutrino, you know, as part of that dark matter mystery, will not cover it. Well, that's part one. Part two is dark energy. And that was brought in after dark matter really became public around 1990. 1988, it was the talk of the town, although really Fritz Zwicky in 1933 had first begun to talk about it by measuring the movements of the galaxies in the Coma Cluster, and we were talking about that last week. We won't go into that level of detail, but we said that then in the 1990s, through photographic techniques, through very carefully done measurements of some of the quasars, and those are very amazing objects out at the edge of the universe. They were not literally behaving or moving like they should. They were moving much more rapidly away from us than they should be, according to the predictions that have been used, standard predictions in the cosmology area, in the physics and astrophysics arena. So the movements are so at variance, they're so at odds with the predictions. They came up with this mysterious dark energy. It's a quintessence. There's the four basic forces of nature, the force of gravity, the force of electromagnetism. Those forces have been known since ancient times. And then the third force of the strong force, which binds the little elements, protons, etc., together in the nucleus. And then the weak force, which is involved in radioactive decay. Those four forces have been known at least for the last 100 years or so. And they're proposing that there is a fifth force. But this fifth force is literally a mysterious energy force, which is driving the universe apart. And the bigger the universe gets, the stronger the force acts. Now, Nick, I don't know if that strikes you as odd, but that strikes me as odd.
No, definitely.
I mean, you would think that a force, you know, would work stronger when it's close together.
Yeah.
You know, in a force field, the further away, it gets weaker and weaker.
That's very odd.
But then this force kicks in when you get the universe gets bigger and bigger. It's like it's falling off a cliff.
Wow.
Yeah. So the mysteriousness of the dark energy side, and how do you even detect that? I mean, it's either part of your equation or it's not. I mean, the dark energy is so mysterious, they haven't gone looking for it. They're just trying to understand it. And as I've been reading up on it, it's not really a hunt for dark energy. It's like, do we even understand dark energy? It's at that level. So let me veer back. We're going to come back and talk a little bit more about dark energy and why it is in a crisis now. But let me come back and just read a little bit more about the discovery, or at least the inference to dark matter, which I think is a little bit more on solid ground than some, let's say, Christian critics have been speaking of it. There is, in this wonderful chapter, it's in the middle of the book, the whole shebang, Timothy Ferris's account of what we've learned about the universe. There is a paragraph talking about the lady astronomer, Vera Rubin, and she talks about her work in studying a group of galaxies, in particular, the disk stars in the bulge of our galaxy. And her group that she was working with in Washington, D.C. at the Carnegie Institution confirmed that disk stars do orbit more slowly than those in the bulge. But they found that outlying stars out on the edge of a spiral galaxy move just as fast as stars in the disk. For the most part, there is no appreciable decline in the star's orbital velocity all the way out to the limits of observation. And in some cases, hold on to your horses, and in some cases, the outer stars actually move faster than those in the main disk.
Wow.
I mean, so what we're saying is there is an oddity that think of the Milky Way. I mean, according to the standard understanding of how physics should work, if almost all of the matter is gathered into that central bulge, into the hub of our galaxy, the outer stars should be moving sedately, slowly, and then the center should be wrapping around rather rapidly, you know. But when you see the outer edge, the outer disk of the Milky Way moving every bit as fast, if not faster, than the inner stars, you say, what is going on? What is holding on to them invisibly and making them whip around just as fast? I think sometimes I've described it as when you look into a case at a jeweler's store that has beautiful diamonds arrayed, your eye is on the diamonds. So think of the stars as the diamonds.
Mm-hmm.
But the diamonds don't weigh that much. But what are the diamonds sitting on? They're sitting on black velvet. And that black velvet covers heavy, let's say, plywood.
Yeah.
Or formica or whatever's underneath it, which may weigh 10 to 100 times more.
Mm-hmm.
So think of the universe, or at least our galaxy, let's say, as the stars are the diamonds. But the diamonds are embedded on this mass of black velvet covered holding platform.
That's just a crazy thought. Wow.
Okay. And so if that be the way that God has arranged, the way our designer has arranged the beauty of our galaxy so that over the period of time, this structure, the glorious spiral structure of our galaxy, maintains its beautiful pattern over time, and it is not just thrown into a chaotic jumble and blah, you know, a blur, then that's part of the glorious plan of our Creator to maintain the beauty of His creation. What do you think, Nick? I mean, time for editorial comment.
No editorial comment. I think that's great.
Okay.
However He decided to design it, it couldn't have been designed any other way. So.
Exactly. And part of the fun of physics is to, if we can pin down, what is that, you know, the black velvet lying on top of the plywood? You know, what are those mysterious particles?
Yeah.
And if they're not machos or wimps or axions, you know, maybe, and if we're off, we're off. I mean, we can revise. That's the beauty of physics, is they can back up and say, well, we went down the wrong road. We can back up and try some other, you know, alley of
like we're doing by talking about dark matter.
Exactly.
And apparently we were
exactly
wrong all along.
Exactly. And that's part of the beauty of science, is to recognize that it's a fallible enterprise. You can learn by your mistakes, and that's part of the beauty of the way God created the universe, so that you can learn by your mistakes. And wow, you know, I think the whole thing is that the laws of physics are crafted by God to display His glory, and I think this is part of discovering the beauty of the laws of physics and chemistry, including the makeup of stars and galaxies. So we're moving rapidly now. I'm just going to just read a little bit more of this discovery, the breakthrough that came from Vera Rubin, one of the great lady astronomers of all time. It says here on page 127-128 in the whole shebang. So it must be that galactic mass does not increase at anything like the rate that the density of visible stars does. What you see in a spiral galaxy is not what you get, Rubin concluded. Isn't that funny?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you always say that, what you see is what you get.
Yeah.
In the case of stars and galaxies, what you see is not what you get.
Yeah, what you don't see is what you get.
Yeah, exactly. And so if luminosity, she continues in her paper, actually was taken from a talk in 1992 as this was becoming like national news. If luminosity were a true indicator of mass, in other words, the visible stars that are shining, if luminosity were a true indicator of mass, most of the mass would be concentrated toward the center. Instead, it has been found that the rotational velocity of spiral galaxies in a diverse sample either remains constant with increasing distance, with increasing distance from the center, or, and this is the shocker, or rises slightly out as far as it is possible to make measurements. And then she adds, this unexpected result indicates that the fall off in luminous mass with distance from the center is balanced by an increase in non-luminous mass, that is, dark matter. Now that's the basis for the theory. Some have said in what are called very tiny dwarf galaxies, it may be up to 30 times the amount of visible matter is dark matter. And for reasons that are not quite understood, elliptical galaxies, we've just mentioned spiral, elliptical galaxies, which are a third of all of the prominent galaxies, they have dark matter apparently. Now, let's go back to the embarrassment of the moment. Let's go ahead and, as it were, zoom in on the problem. And to do that, I think we can't do any much better than to go to our main source, one of our two main sources, and that is crev.info. And so anybody listening to The Universe Next Door on a regular basis have heard may have heard us talk about our great internet go-to websites. One of them actually has the name Creation Evolution Headlines. So if you want to bookmark, if you're sitting at a desk, if you're on the road, obviously, then you'll just need to memorize this and not try to write it down. But it's easy. Take the two letters of creation, CR, the first two letters of evolution, EV, and then glue them together. Is that easy enough, Nick?
Yeah, it's simple enough.
Yeah, CREV. and you have Krev, okay? And then to add the dot info, and you got it. So 8 letters with a dot in the middle, krev.info. And what I did just literally today, because I know I've been reading, I've read probably 7 or 8 articles just since January on the crisis in both dark matter and dark energy. And so what I did is I just did a search. I went to krev.info, and I just entered search, and I'm reading now from the April 4th article written by the director of that wonderful website, David Coppedge, a dear friend who's been on our program probably a dozen times. And the engaging title of this article is called The Dark Side of Dark Matter Hunts. And he says here, dark matter is still a no-show. What will it take for cosmologists to give up on a fruitless quest? By the way, Dave Coppedge, our friend, is not bullish on dark matter. Did you catch that? So I this is enjoyable. I like to hear all sides of this discussion. So Dave is very giving a thumbs down, kind of a skeptical. So he's a skeptic. This is interesting. Chalk up another failure. One of the candidates for dark matter, the Axion, A-X-I-O-N, the Axion, did not turn up in the latest sensitive search. For years, most hunts have focused on wimps or machos. We've already talked about wimps and machos. Those are technical names for little weird little particles, the wimps, or huge Jupiter-type, like massive collections of particles, machos. But those continuously fail. Dark matter experiment finds no evidence of axions, is the report that comes literally the 1st of April from phys.org. And here's the actual quote from the article. Physicists from MIT and elsewhere have performed the first run of a new experiment to detect axions. These are hypothetical particles that are predicted to be among the lightest particles in the universe. If they exist, axions would be virtually invisible, yet inescapable. They could make up nearly 85% of the mass of the universe in the form of dark matter. And then, of course, Dave Coppedge puts the editorial commentary here. One of the problems with the candidate is that axions are just as hypothetical as dark matter itself. This means that physicists are looking for one ghost to explain another ghost. That's pretty clever. David is always a great writer. Let me go back to the quote from phys.org. While they are thought to be everywhere, axions are predicted to be virtually ghost-like, having only tiny interactions with anything else in the universe. Quote, as dark matter, they shouldn't affect your everyday life, quote, Winslow says, quote, but they're thought to affect things on a cosmological level, like the expansion of the universe and the formation of galaxies we see in the night sky. And that's the end of the Winslow quote. So David says, in short, cosmologists need the ghosts to keep their theory from failing. But is dark matter even needed? Another team from Keck University Observatory found a galaxy without dark matter. Now, this is embarrassing. Can you imagine why, Nick? If they find a galaxy that apparently has either virtually no or no dark matter at all?
The theory wouldn't hold up very well.
Yeah, because you're supposed to have, all these galaxies.
Yeah,
are supposed
the whole universe.
Yeah, the whole universe, including, virtually every galaxy.
Except for a couple.
Yeah. So the title is Unusual Galaxies Defy Dark Matter Theory. A team from Keck Observatory found a galaxy without dark matter. Here's the quote. After drawing both praise and skepticism, the team of astronomers who discovered NGC 1052, et cetera, et cetera, the very first known galaxy to contain little to no dark matter, they're back with stronger evidence about its bizarre behavior. So they're saying that the non-discovery of dark matter in this very weird, bizarre galaxy is actually evidence for dark matter. The idea is that regular matter and dark matter act independently, so it should be possible to find them with separate means. This is like saying, says David Coppedge, this is like saying that since they don't find ghosts in the living room, it may be still possible to find them hiding in the bedroom. Well, David Coppedge, we appreciate your coverage of yet another failure in this attempt to track down these elusive guys, the dark matter candidates. Now, I could go on and list another 5 or so failures to track down in very costly, very high-tech experiments to find anything that could even conceivably fit the bill for dark matter. When it comes to dark energy, we have a kind of a parallel problem, because dark energy is often said to be that which expands the universe, that which drives the universe expansion. But I think that Christians should say, hold on a minute. They are saying that we need to have a physical factor to explain the rapidity, the speed, and even the acceleration going on in the expansion. But aren't they really ruling out something? The possibility that there is a creator who not only initiated the universe, mm-hmm. but controls it, and even actually may pull it further and faster apart for his glory. And so one of the things that I do in my coursework here at Trinity College of Florida, as we discover these new developments, these findings in physics and chemistry and biology and all the sciences, is that God in his word, in the word of God, such as Zechariah 12:10, where he announces at the beginning of a great prophecy, this is the oracle of the Lord who stretched out the heavens, mm-hmm. who laid the foundation of the earth, and who formed the spirit of man within him. Now, why does God, in Zechariah 12, verse 1, give that triple perspective, that three-level perspective of creation? Because he's trying to remind us that he's not just some little deity who has some inkling about the future. He is the architect. He is the mastermind of all mm-hmm. physical reality.
And he upholds it.
Exactly. He controls it. He initiates it. He upholds it. He rules it. And this is the Christian teaching. Very wise Christian thinkers and theologians in years past gave the wonderful word providence. I love that word, providence. It has the idea of word providing for. He provides daily for your needs. He provides daily for the structure of the universe to be stable, to be accommodating, to be welcoming, to be pro-life, to be pro-flourishing. Yes, there are hurricanes. Yes, there are tornadoes. Yes, there are earthquakes. That's part of the kind of the edgy side of creation, to remind us that nothing is, let's say, standing permanently except God, people, and his word. Okay? And so as we study the quirks and the weirdness of dark matter and dark energy, and I'm going to have to suspend our discussion of dark energy right there. Maybe I can do a PS later on this summer. I'm doing some work with Rob Sheldon, our physics, formerly a physics professor at Wheaton College. Great guy, has some insights, and I'm going to be interviewing him today. But I just want to make this point that not only in Zechariah 12, but three times in the passage of Isaiah 40 through 48, God says, not once, not twice, but three times, I am the creator who stretched out the heavens. And it's just possible that what we're seeing now in that accelerating expansion of the universe, which they had to put in this fudge factor of dark energy to explain the expansion, maybe what they are attributing to dark energy is really due to the very bright energy of God's hands or God's word expanding it at just the right acceleration pace that gives it perfection. That's the perfection that God even built into the salvation plan. You can have salvation as a free gift. The Christ who died on the cross is the Christ who paid for every single one of your sins. The Christ who rose again from the dead, who wants to be your loving leader, your Lord, your King, your director, your CEO, your coach. You can open your heart to him today and receive him. Contact us at information@apologetics.org. See you back here next week on The Universe Next Door.
You've been listening to The Universe Next Door with Dr. Tom Woodward, sponsored by the C.S. Lewis Society and Trinity College of Florida, and supported through the gifts of listeners just like you. To gather resources, continue the conversation, and support The Universe Next Door with your financial gifts, go to apologetics.org. That's apologetics.org. And join us again next time as we continue to seek the truth about life, faith, and worldview in The Universe Next Door.